Hare Krishna. So I'd like to welcome you all this evening. For this retreat. I want to introduce Devamrita Swami Maharaj. Some of you already met him before. Devamrita Maharaj grew up in New York, graduated as a scholarship student from Yale University. He once told us his scholarship was close to 25 grand a year. This is going 30 years back. As you know, Yale University produces most number of CEOs and presidents of America. So having come from such a elite educational background, he came across books written by Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita, and some other Indian scriptures. At that point, Maharaj decided that he would dedicate his future life towards spreading this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita throughout the world. So since then, Maharaj has been traveling all over the world, talking to so many professionals and executives, which is, you know, in contrast to a very flourishing, high-flying corporate career, which is what is awarded to the students who pass out from Yale. So having declined that kind of a lifestyle, and a lifestyle where he's, you know, as a true Vaishnav who wants to solve the problems or the miseries of the people around, he's dedicating all his energy for this cause. Maharaj travels in USA, South America, Russia, India, and many parts of Europe. And there was just an interesting incident that, you know, interesting information that we heard was, you see people and you know, you must be in your unis or in your colleges, you see some sadhus posters who travels to US, but you don't see many sadhus who travel to Siberia. Maharaj travels all the way up to Siberia, which is very extreme weather, in a very hostile environment there. And so he travels there to give this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. This, and he goes annually in many parts of Russia. And the air transport in Russia and many countries around there is not like what you see in Australia, where you check in your luggage in Bombay and you pick up your luggage on Sydney airport. So in all the airports, Maharaj physically has to pick up his bag from the car, put it all the way up to the aeroplane, load it, and when it lands, you get out, you pick up your bag and back to the walk on the tarmac with your luggage to the airport. So he does this pretty much every every other week. So I thought, you know, very austerity which he takes upon himself to be able to reach people like us. Maharaj speaks, wherever he travels, he gets invited to speak to and invited by quite a few industrialists, corporate executives, professional students. Whenever he comes to Australia, Melbourne Uni, RMIT, he speaks in those venues. Even in India, he speaks very regularly in IIT, Bombay, and other institutes in Calcutta and other parts also. And so many other professionals and students take guidance. I was very surprised when I came across this gentleman from South Africa. He's now as good as an MD of Chrysler Daimler automobile manufacturing factory plant. And he was telling how he takes guidance and teachings from Maharaj and leads his life and tries to disseminate this kind of knowledge to his junior executives within the plant. Similarly, in India also, we have heard from so many industrialists like Mafatlal and who take guidance from Maharaj. So we are very fortunate to have Maharaj here. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Om Gyana Chimananda Sya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasti Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. I've been thinking how to address you all in a way that will be relevant for your head and your heart. I can see that so many of you are at a crossroads. You are not quite sure what your future should be. On the one hand, it seems that your life is set. Economic acceleration, corporate dedication, it seems like that. On the other hand, however, I know that so many of you have another dimension about yourself. And you wonder about that other dimension. While you're feeling this other dimension about yourself, which consists of spiritual longings, spiritual inquisitiveness, spiritual curiosity about the deepest wisdom, while you're feeling that other side of yourself, that other dimension of yourself, at the same time, you're feeling so much pressure, social expectation. And you're wondering how much of that social expectation you can take on board. How much should you take on board and how much you shouldn't. Then you have to add in other complications. You have one foot in one world, one foot in the other world. You have one foot in India, one foot in the Wild West. And you're wondering how much weight to put on each foot, or whether to lift one foot up or the other foot up. Where will you plant your feet? That question is in the back of your mind. What kind of life were you going to live? Especially since so many of you will reside here in Australia. And even those of you who return to India, you won't be the same. So therefore, we have to gently and delicately try to understand these issues rather than hide from them. Now, you are all very thoughtful persons. You've subjected your intellects to rigorous academic exercises. You've subjected your mind to intense focus on the goal to achieve well in school and to join a salaried situation in which you can excel. So certainly you all have a lot of energy, a lot of finesse, a lot of expertise. But how to live with all that? It's like you have a car with a very powerful engine. How to live with all this energy and power that you have? Which direction will you go in? More to the material side, more to the spiritual side? Is there indeed a spiritual side? how much of the Wild West, particularly Australia, do you want to embrace? How much of India do you want to forget? These are issues that are bubbling up within you. So, this weekend, let us address these issues. Let us not hide from them, but let us gently, delicately approach these issues. Don't feel shy. You're not alone. You can be sure that there are many others in this room who are feeling exactly the way you are. And perhaps now, for the first time, we're going to deal with these things, these issues, in a gentle way, so that we can cope with them for our overall betterment in life. I want to begin by discussing the theme of manufacturing, because I would like to propose to you all that each one of you is a factory owner. Each one of you is manufacturing something. Now, if you think of your life as a factory, an industrial unit, what is it that you're producing? Think about it for a few moments. It's not that you're just living, passing the days and nights, and that's all. No, you are producing something. You are manufacturing something with your life. So think of your life as a factory. And please tell me, what is it that you are producing? What is it that you're manufacturing from your industrial unit? Anyone would like to say?
Whatever you work, what are you working at? For example, I'm in computer, so I'm producing computer products.
Okay, that's one way to look at it. You look at your job. My job is producing computer programs, so that's me. Anything else? What else could you be manufacturing, producing?
Thoughts.
Oh, getting interesting here. Thoughts and atmosphere. What do you mean by atmosphere?
Like you, when you are expressing your views to others, it can like affect to them. If it is good, then of course it's going to make good atmosphere.
Yes. Oh, that's a very good point. You're producing thoughts, and you're also producing an atmosphere around you by your contribution, your personal contribution. You're changing the atmosphere around you for better or worse. Yeah, good point. What was that? I mean, wait, someone over here said something. What was that?
Social life.
You're producing social life. Could you be more descriptive?
Yeah, like same as he said, like we behave in certain manners, and like whatever we do, it affects the whole like community.
You see yourself manufacturing in that way, an effect upon the whole community. What community? Australia, India, or?
Community means like our family, our friends, like the persons we belong to. We affect their lives in certain ways.
But where is your family?
In India.
Outside. How is it that you're here in Melbourne? You're having a big effect on them? Besides, they're missing you, of course.
Yeah, but like if I'm here for some purpose, I like study, do something, like achieve something, some goals, and then I go back to them, I can give them better life or something.
You go back, you return as a hero, yes. How many of you plan to return as a hero? Raise your hands, please. Yeah. Okay, you're being humble. How many of you plan to return? Raise your hands. Oh, not so many. We have a lot of future Australian citizens here, yes? Interesting. So, yes, that's one way you're producing a social effect, that when you, if you do return home, you hope to bring wealth, fame, and so forth for your family. Yes? Your parents, your relatives, they can boast. Yeah. Yes, he has returned. Very successful. Number one. All right, anything else you're manufacturing?
I try to produce happiness for myself all the time.
Oh, very good. You're trying to produce happiness for yourself all the time.
In all senses.
In what?
In all senses, all moods.
In every kind of way. Yes, this is a very important point. We're going to get back to that. Anyone else? Visualize yourself as a factory, an industrial unit. You're not just a passive person.
Can you say karma?
Definitely you're manufacturing karma. Do you understand the full significance of that, though?
Not full significance.
Right. Every action has a reaction, whether you know it or not. So just by you're acting in this world, you are producing reactions for yourself, even though you may not see them right away. Maybe you all can help me. How many of you are concerned with karma? Please raise your hands. All right. How many don't know so much about it, so raise your hands. And how many don't really care about it? Raise your hands. Okay, thank you for being honest. All right. So yes, it's true. We can see just by the actions and just by the actions of matter that every time some matter goes through some motion, activity, transformation, there's a reaction. Similarly, what about consciousness? The ancient Vedic knowledge of India shows us that just as matter has reactions, similarly consciousness has reactions. All right. I want to return to a point that was made. Manufacturing happiness. You almost got it on the nail on the head. Very good. You get an award, but you almost had it. It seems very appropriate. Yes, I'm manufacturing happiness. Think about that. But if we look through the lens of Vedic knowledge, we find that we're not so much producing happiness, but we're manufacturing plans for happiness. There's a big difference, although it seems subtle. Constantly, your factory of your life is churning out plans how to be happy. This is what characterizes your life. Every one of you here has a plan for happiness, at least one, and it changes. The factory is constantly churning out these plans. Your whole life passes in that way. Just like one of you said, your plan or a plan for happiness is when you finish your studies and return home in glory. Everyone in your city or village knows the hero has returned, bringing wealth and fame to the family. You can entertain them all with your overseas experiences, yes? Yeah. Tell them you went to some cricket matches, right? Tell them of your experiences. So, that's one kind of plan for happiness. If you're going to be in touch with yourself, you have to understand you're constantly manufacturing plans for happiness. Constantly, constantly. And this is what people call life. Making plans to be happy. Please be subtle enough to see the difference between making plans for happiness and making happiness. The big difference. And you can save yourself a lot of trouble if you can see the difference between making plans for happiness and making happiness. Actually, you can't make happiness. This is a very important tenet of Vedic knowledge. Your happiness that you're going to get in this life is coming to you automatically based on what you did in your previous life. So in other words, you can't increase the amount of happiness you're due by one bit. Nor can you decrease the amount of distress you're due by one bit. It's all coming to you based on activities in the past life. And what you do in this life affects the happiness and distress you'll get in your next life. These are the actions and reactions of material existence. Now, it's hard work manufacturing plans to be happy. Try to see yourself doing this from morning to night. You're constantly in the planning phase. And very rarely are you in the phase of actually experiencing happiness. So much planning, planning, planning. Now catch this. Even when you think you are having a happy experience, while you're having that so-called happy experience, you're planning something else. You've noticed that? Your mind is planning something else ahead of time. So you're not really even experiencing the happiness of the moment. Planning, planning, planning. Manufacturing plans to be happy. Now, Krishna consciousness, the pinnacle of Vedic wisdom, means to shut down the factory for manufacturing happiness. This sounds very radical to some people. Shut that factory down? What am I going to do? If I'm not manufacturing plans to be happy, what is there left for my life? Some are even afraid of this. I can't shut this factory down. I'll disappear. Some are even proud they have such a factory that's working overtime, manufacturing these plans. Some of you are even competing. I've got a better plan for happiness than you do. And here, the message of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is you should shut the factory down. Now, is this some kind of primitive knowledge? No, this is the highest scientific knowledge. Shut the factory down, stop manufacturing plans for happiness, and accept the standard plan for happiness. So it's not that you're just becoming nothing. You're accepting the best. You see, it's really amazing when you understand there's no need for you to make plans for happiness. The authorized method for happiness has already been given. Does that make you feel bad? Oh, you mean the way for happiness has already been given? Well, where's my chance for creativity, individuality? Now, you're a tiny living entity. What makes you think you can compete with the knowledge of how to be happy that comes from the supreme entity? This is the advantage of listening to Krishna. By listening to Lord Krishna, you're getting the best. The best plan comes from the best person. So, we want to shut down our concocting process. Our factory manufactures concoctions for how to be happy. We want to shut that factory down and accept the standard plan for happiness. This is news to so many people that there is already existing a standard way to be happy. You don't have to pull your hair and scratch your head. How am I going to be happy? What's my plan to be happy? Simply, you have to look at the plan, the standard way for happiness that's already been given. Now, I know this is a surprise to some of you. as you make your way through life. But please meditate on this possibility, a standard plan for happiness that I'm not aware of. Now, you're tiny living entities, so you have a tiny ability to manufacture plans for happiness. Bhagavad Gita introduces you to the Supreme Person who has unlimited ability for making plans, and those plans turn out perfect. Your plans don't turn out perfectly because you're so tiny. But the Supreme Person, Bhagavan Krishna, because of unlimited consciousness, can produce perfect plans for happiness in all situations, in all places, in all times. This is the advantage of Krishna consciousness. Now, it takes some humility to accept this point. I can feel that many of you are thinking about this. You mean I don't have to manufacture any plans to be happy? I have to just discover what the standard method is that already exists? Yes. Mm-hmm. Let us listen to Lord Krishna speaking in Bhagavad Gita. This is chapter 7, entitled Knowledge of the Absolute. What do we mean by knowledge of the Absolute? Absolute knowledge means it doesn't change. It's the same in the past, the present, and the future. How many of you are studying that kind of knowledge? Any of you studying absolute knowledge? No. The technical knowledge that most of you are studying changes all the time. So we have to recognize that there is changeable knowledge and there's also unchangeable knowledge. We want that superior knowledge that doesn't change, although time changes. We want that superior knowledge that is the same in past, present, and future. This is what Krishna is speaking about in Bhagavad Gita. Because Lord Krishna is beyond the three phases of time. He's beyond past, present, and future. Therefore, he can give knowledge that's beyond the three phases of time. Now, you can't do that. All the knowledge that you try to give is bound up by time. But just because you can't do it, doesn't mean no one can do it. In Bhagavad Gita, you hear the Supreme Person delivering to you knowledge that is not affected by time. Because the speaker is not affected by time. Think about the advantage of this kind of wisdom. Most of you have heard of Bhagavad Gita, but many of you may have some kind of misconception that Bhagavad Gita is some kind of folklore, mythology, or sectarian religious book. I would like to propose to you all that you consider Bhagavad Gita as the product of supreme consciousness. You are a tiny consciousness, and in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Consciousness is speaking to you. Your consciousness is limited. Krishna's consciousness is unlimited. Therefore, when Krishna speaks, we pay attention. I know some of you are a little familiar with Bhagavad Gita, but you might think, oh, it's an ancient text. Maybe it's archaic. Maybe it's too old to be applicable for today. No. We want this weekend that you get a taste for the non-stop, eternal relevance of Bhagavad Gita. Let us listen as Krishna explains this first verse in chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute. Knowledge of that which doesn't change when time changes, when the body changes, when the mind changes, when the world changes, when material nature changes. This knowledge that Krishna is speaking does not change. because Krishna doesn't change. In other words, if you want to find the best knowledge, you have to find the person who doesn't change. And that person can give you knowledge that doesn't change. When Nityananda Priya introduced me, he was describing how, yes, I studied at Yale University, where most of the presidents of the USA come. In fact, in some elections, both candidates are from Yale. So, although I studied at that university, I was looking for changeless knowledge. Now, why is it that when I finished my studies and I contacted Bhagavad Gita, my whole life went in another direction? Why do you think that was so? Was I in economic hard times with no options for the future? Why do you think my whole life went in another direction? Who can say?
Happiness.
What do you mean?
Did you want real happiness?
I wasn't happy before?
That knowledge was not perfect. Thirst for absolute knowledge.
Huh?
Thirst for absolute knowledge.
Search for absolute knowledge. But why, as a Yale graduate, should I want anything better?
Your
factory is
manufacturing this
factory. Your factory's manufacturing. I wanted to shut the factory down, huh? Why? Would you have done it? If you were in my shoes, would you have shut the factory down? So you wouldn't shut the factory down, huh? You say, I've got my Yale degree. Bring all the success, right?
Yes, the thinking part that I have to. You are planning something else.
He's not planning anything.
Huh?
You are not planning for anything called happiness because you are devoted to Krishna because he has absolute power, absolute knowledge. So let's accept that knowledge. Why should we make a plan?
But why would I, as a Yale graduate, want to approach Bhagavad Gita?
Because your life is predetermined.
Because what? Predetermined? I had no choice? Really, you think I had no choice?
But because of your previous karma, your karma.
Oh, you mean my decision to dedicate myself to the science of Bhagavad Gita was predetermined by karma?
Yeah.
How's that?
Krishna pulled you towards him.
Why?
Because of your previous karma. Because.
Why me? Well, what about you? Will Krishna pull you towards it? He's pulling. How does it feel? Tell us.
I think you're missing something in yourself. You want to find a link with something which you're missing.
What were you saying?
You were looking for peace of mind.
Peace of mind. Well, I was a Yale graduate. What more do you need? Would you all have done the same thing if you were in my shoes? Trying? Huh?
The meaning is satisfying with the academic books. What you have described, the academic books, the knowledge was not so much absolute, and you felt that the academic books, those knowledge was not proper. So you thought this will be the very accurate, and also your life is being predetermined.
Well, what do you think? Did I do the right thing? What would you have done? Okay, let's say. Now, what is your name? Ratnam. Okay. Ratnam has just graduated, from Yale University. It's 1972. He's graduated. You know, the president of the university has made his commencement speech. You have your diploma. Now what?
I have to search for higher knowledge.
There's two ways. You can look for a job for your material happiness, or you can keep with your spiritual happiness, searching for more.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
Depends upon your financial condition. If you don't have any finance, then you look for jobs.
Yale graduates don't look for jobs. The corporations look for them.
You might be thinking the people who have graduated from Yale and yourself, they might still get across to the problems which everyone come, the diseases and all those sort of stuff, the thinking might be coming in your mind. This is not the, you can't overcome through few things which are implemented on you. You still have, might be thinking, what's the true knowledge? I'm not satisfied what you have studied. And that won't take you to the height where you want to reach, the place you want to reach. So what's the knowledge, what's the absolute truth where you can defeat these things and come to satisfaction stage?
Okay, let me ask you, what would you all have done if you were in my shoes? 1972, you just graduated. Let's hear from others also. What would you have done? Yes.
I know, like, I've graduated from Yale and a job is ready for me.
Not a job, many jobs.
Yeah. At least one good job is ready for me, and from that angle, I'm very much secure. So I've got an option either to go for this best opportunity or look for something better, which probably I don't know what it can be. But I've got some baseline, which is very good. So in that way, I've got a good opportunity to look for something better than what I've got. Maybe from that angle, you've got a chance to look at Bhagavad Gita and you realized at that moment that probably this is better than what I was getting after graduating from Yale. And that's a matter of chance and mercy of Krishna as well.
Do you want that mercy upon you? Really? It won't be too strong for you?
There is only one part. Yale is one part of your life. Like you had, you were a person. You were, you had friends. You had lot of. You could have seen that. Okay, whatever other circle, people around you, what they were thinking, their influences, their materialistic or their problems, all of them had influence on you. So, if you consider all that, maybe yes, that decision. And yes, you are here. You have achieved a different.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you didn't like the best job that you can get from Yale, the president of the United States has to have the next genma and just keep on going in the cycle of life and death if you want to get out of that.
Yeah. Interesting. Anyone else? Huh?
Probably that was the first time when you realized instead of making plans for happiness, you can instead start being happy.
But what would you have done if you were in my shoes? What would you have done?
Most probably done the other way around.
What would you have done?
Most probably taken the wrong decision.
Why?
I mean, due to pulls and pressures around, and the pulls and pressures you have for yourself and stuff like that. But
anyone else? What would you have done in my shoes? Yes. Both? So, take the top job and do a little puja, yes? Huh? I'm just asking. I didn't. How many of you are supporting the take the best job and do the little puja approach? Raise your hands. How many say, take the best job and do lots of puja? Raise your hands. How many say, take the best job and do no puja? Raise your hands. No puja. Interesting. So, let me explain to you that I don't think it is so important whether I took the best job or not. Krishna consciousness is not about, you know, that you have to give up your job prospects, you have to give up your home prospects or your marriage prospects. Krishna consciousness is about accepting the best thing. Once you accept the best thing, then everything else, all the other facets, aspects of your life are harmonized. So, what I'd like you to focus on, at least in my situation, if you want to, you know, feel yourself in my shoes back in June of 1972, the main thing is that I had a thirst for the best knowledge. Now, whether or not I accepted the best job, that is not the most important thing. In other words, it's not that in order to study Bhagavad Gita, you cannot have the best job. But you should work in order to live, not live to work. So in other words, okay, support yourself. Take care of your family responsibilities, but you should have a higher priority in life. That is the point. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, is Arjuna a sadhu? No, he's a family man. He's a military man. Yet Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to him. So that should let you know, loud and clear, that you have complete possibilities by listening to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. To become Krishna conscious, to practice Sanatana Dharma, the eternal occupation of the living entity, doesn't mean you have to give up this and give up that. It does mean you take on the best thing. You take on the best knowledge. When you have the best knowledge, you'll have the best lifestyle. People are suffering because of a lack of this best knowledge. So I recognized that when I graduated from Yale, that I wanted the best knowledge. Now, how could I consider Bhagavad Gita as the best knowledge? Think about that. But you all, you are from the land where Bhagavad Gita is so famous. Would you ever consider that it should have such an impact on someone's life? Why not?
Hardly read about Gita.
Huh?
We have Gita, but I don't think that many of people have read about Gita.
How many of you have read Bhagavad Gita? Raise your hands. Yes. How many of you think it's too difficult? Raise your hands. It's more difficult than anything you study. You study at the university, huh? No. One great problem that I see in the world is that even those who are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, they don't properly take advantage of it because they actually don't understand it. They don't understand the advantage of hearing from the Supreme Consciousness. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is offering you a system to verify your connection with the Supreme Consciousness. This is the greatest gift to the living entity. Let's hear what Krishna says. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogam Yujan Marashraya Asangshayam Samagram Mam Yata Gyasasi Touch Trinu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now hear, O son of Pritha, how? By practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So here, Krishna is giving you a process. He's not giving you religious belief. How many of you are, anyone still studying IT here? Raise your hands. Not so many anymore. 4 years ago, almost everyone in the room would raise their hand. Now, right? Okay, what's the new thing? Accounting. How many are studying accounting? Yes. Engineering? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when you go to school, do the teachers say to you, do your professors say to you, we want you to believe in accounting. We want you to believe in engineering. That's it. How many of you have gone to such a school? No, they don't tell you we want to. No, they ask for much more. Not, they don't say, okay, for the final exam is the question, do you believe in this? Of course not. They want to see that you understand the process. Similarly in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is not asking for belief. He's asking that you take up the process, that you enter the laboratory, the spiritual laboratory. What you all are afraid of is traditional religious belief. Most of you are afraid of that. You're even a bit embarrassed by it. But Krishna is not asking for traditional religious belief in Bhagavad Gita. Although Bhagavad Gita may be a part of someone's traditional religious beliefs, Krishna is not asking for that in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, you have consciousness dialoguing with consciousness. You have the Supreme Consciousness, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, dialoguing with Arjuna, the limited consciousness. It's not a question of what you believe or don't believe. We should look at the laboratory process. If we approach Bhagavad Gita in that way, then we can enrichen our life with the priceless gems contained in Bhagavad Gita. But I think so many of you have this jaded vision. Jaded vision means prejudiced vision. Can you imagine how that is so? You're prejudiced against something that's actually so close to you. Oh, Bhagavad Gita, it's one of those traditional religious books. My grandmother touches it to her head every morning. She read me stories from the Mahabharata when I was little. This is a prejudiced view. In other words, I'm daring to say to you that even though you consider that you're from the land of Bhagavad Gita, you have a prejudiced view of Bhagavad Gita. Can you believe that? Think about that. Generally, you'd say, well, the Muslims have a prejudiced view of Bhagavad Gita, or the Christians have a prejudiced view of Bhagavad Gita. No, you yourselves have a prejudiced view of Bhagavad Gita. You're discriminating against your own self. Why? Because of a stereotype in your mind that Bhagavad Gita is some kind of folk religion, just some religious traditions. But nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna present anything in that way. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking beyond time, beyond space. And he's giving you a process by which you can experience what he says beyond time and space. This is the most valuable scientific knowledge. I've explained at so many retreats that we've had here, nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say, believe in me. But everywhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, here is the process by which you can verify what I'm saying. Isn't that fair? When you think of Bhagavad Gita in that way, things start to clear up in your head, yes? Because so many of you were thinking, oh, it's a nice religious book, and this weekend we'll come out to this nice place in the country, and we'll hear a little bit about Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, it's probably be interesting, but certainly it'll be nothing that can transform my life. After all, my goals are set. My plans are straight ahead. Economic development and happiness. Now we are finding out that Bhagavad Gita has nothing to do with religious tradition. Although it is true that religious traditions have expropriated Bhagavad Gita. That means religious traditions have utilized Bhagavad Gita. All right, if something is the best, why not use it? But the fact is, Bhagavad Gita is beyond religious tradition and custom. It's offering the laboratory process for achieving the ultimate success in life, which is spiritual success. When you look at Bhagavad Gita in that way, then some interest starts to arise in your heart. So, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, Bhagavan, what does that mean? Is that a word that can be applied to just any person? Now, it's true. In India, people often will stick this title on themselves, Bhagavan. But what does Bhagavan actually mean? It means the possessor of unlimited opulence. That is God. Therefore, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. That means the possessor of unlimited opulence is speaking. Now, you have very tiny opulences, very limited, and you can speak. Why can't the possessor of unlimited opulence speak? This is news for you, huh? That the possessor of unlimited opulence speaks. And the possessor of unlimited opulence speaks the best knowledge. Please approach Bhagavad Gita with the understanding that you're hearing from the best person and the best person gives the best knowledge. You have heard from so many teachers, so many professors. Now hear from the best teacher. That's the chance you get from Bhagavad Gita. Now hear how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. This is an offer, a presentation. Here's the process. You can know. Free from doubt, you'll know fully. Who can resist such a call? And this laboratory process involves attaching your mind to Krishna. Now, your mind is already attached to so many things. I know for many of you, especially since you've come to Australia, your mind is bombarded with so many attachments. Things you would have even never considered back in India. Of course, although if you're from the big cities like Delhi or Mumbai, you know things are changing very quickly. Still, it's not as intense as what you're experiencing here. Right? Mind is constantly bombarded all the time. Be attached to this, be attached to that. You're wondering how much to take on board. How much should you bite into the Aussie life? Right? Most of you say, well, I'd never do it fully. Right? How many of you think, I'll go for it fully, the full Aussie lifestyle? Raise your hand. Anyone? No. You can't do that. But there's some things, right? Some things look inviting, yes? Although, huh?
I want to go for the full Aussie life.
The full Aussie life. What do you, how do you describe it? Tell us.
Then I will know about that.
Huh?
I know about that.
You want to go for it?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it? Tell us.
I'll get the knowledge for Aussie life also.
Huh?
What the Aussie life are, I get the knowledge. It's also knowledge. I get the other culture knowledge. Like it's the other culture for me. I'm from India.
Yeah.
My culture is different. All these cultures are different. So if I involve in that culture, I get the knowledge of that culture also.
What is that culture? Even the Australians themselves say they have no culture. You have found some culture in Australia? They'll be surprised to know. What is that culture?
It's different from our country.
Definitely. What is it? Huh?
I don't know really because I'm doing Australia, but I don't.
How long have you been here?
From last 2.5 months.
Oh. Okay, you're just in the exploratory stage, yes? You're checking it all out, right? Who can describe what, if you want to call it Aussie culture, if you want to call it culture, who can describe what it consists of? Eddie? Huh?
Booze.
Huh? Booze, yes. Booze, booze, and more booze.
Gold.
Huh? Gold. Smoking what? Alcohol, what else? Huh?
Same one thing. See, people are there from last 7 to 8 years, but they don't know about the whole of life.
Is that good or bad that they don't know? Is that good or bad?
I think it's bad.
You think they should get into it, huh? Let's get into it and get boozed and... What?
I will get that, but after that, I will give them some my cultural knowledge also. Like, I will give them the cultural knowledge of my cultural knowledge to them also, by getting them.
First, you get drunk with them, right? And then you say, by the way, from my country, we have very elevated knowledge. But what is that culture? Right. Have you fully understood what's going on? There is no culture. There's nothing uplifting. There's nothing enlightening.
They do whatever they like.
Don't you like that though? Don't you wish you could do that? Whatever you like. Without worrying about parents or family or reputation or honor or character. Doesn't it look fun to do whatever you like? You get drunk as you want. You just do whatever you want. It doesn't look like fun?
That's not true. They have more rules regarding, like, you find people in India, you find more people getting drunk and driving than over here. They have more rules against that. They have a culture of exploitation. That is what I would say. Their culture is based on exploitation.
Culture of what?
Culture of exploitation. And they have a concept of writing by doing by rules. Everybody tends to follow the same rule, but when it comes to personal things, they go recklessly.
Yes, yes. When it comes to personal things, they go recklessly, right? When it comes to driving, they follow the rules, unlike in India. But when it comes to personal life, do any animal-like thing. Okay, but drive very carefully. Yes, this is the way of life here. Yes.
Also, so they'll get caught if they drunk and driving and over the speed.
Yes, so follow the traffic laws very nicely while being an animal. Yes? Yes. So, what you all have to deal with is how much of this, if any, are you going to accept as your own? After all, the pressure is on you. You're here in Australia. You can't be the same like you were before. Just like now, I was reading how in the cities in India where there are so many call centers like Bangalore, the young men and women are starting to live together without marriage. Why? They say, well, my girlfriend or my boyfriend works a completely different shift, so we never have time to see each other because when I'm off, He's working. When he's off, I'm working. Therefore, better to live together. That way we get to know each other. And it's also cheaper if we live together. And they all say that our parents were horrified to hear this. They cried and cried. Night after night, they cried. But now they accept. So everything is okay.
We are always precise, always are working and always we think of that we have to make a lot of money, we have to keep our children's post and we will never enjoy our life. But they are doing it. They are enjoying it.
What a change, they are working very hard.
Huh?
They are working very hard.
What a change.
Here. So, and you want to work hard. So you want to accept the part of life here where you work hard and you get the financial success? What we hope to inspire you with this weekend is the desire to take your life to a higher level. So you can discriminate between what is negative and what is positive. Because you're being presented with so many choices. How are you going to live? Why should you restrain yourself? And why should you try to have good behavior? What's the point of it? Is it just based on tradition? Tell me. Why should you have good behavior? Why shouldn't you just do like the Aussies do? Why not? Is it just because you're afraid if your parents find out? You can easily do things in a way they'll never know, right?
Because for every action there is a reaction. So if you do good behavior, you will get good behavior. If you do some bad behavior, then you will get bad behavior.
How many of you agree with that? Raise your hands. How many of you aren't sure? So, in other words, what you're saying, what you all are saying is that even though he said that, you're not sure that there's some absolute standard for behavior, scientific standard of behavior. That means gradually you're going to become affected by the atmosphere around you, in which you should decide at every moment what you think is good. It can change from moment to moment. Each person should judge what is right, what is wrong. Sooner or later you're going to be like that because you don't have the knowledge of an absolute standard of behavior. Now, where can an absolute standard of behavior come from? It can only come from the Supreme Absolute. In Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Absolute, the Supreme Consciousness is speaking. Therefore, we listen. Remember, we discussed manufacturing plans for happiness and how to shut down that factory. The factory is shut down from making its false concocted plans when you hear from Krishna. In other words, Krishna is in another category. And he's teaching you the process by which you can verify your spiritual identity. Now let's talk a bit about material science. Science is ordinarily known. Often, materialistic scientists very aggressively say that because the soul, spiritual energy, God, cannot be perceived by science as known today, therefore anytime you talk about the soul or God or the spiritual energy, it's unscientific. Some of you have heard that before, yes? Why should science become concerned with things that cannot be subject to the scientific method? And if you talk about those things, it means you're unscientific. We don't have time for these things. We just have time for things that can be quantified, dissected by our particular type of science. if what you're talking about cannot be verified by our type of science, then what is it? It's unscientific. Do you catch the prejudice here? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, the supreme scientist, is speaking. He's giving you a different scientific method. Now, we state up front, you cannot verify the soul or the supreme soul through ordinary science. We don't hide that reality from people. It is a fact. Through ordinary scientific methods, you cannot perceive the soul or the supreme soul. Now, does that mean anyone who is pushing their life forward to this goal of spiritual knowledge is unscientific? No. There's a different type of science. And that is what Krishna is giving in Bhagavad Gita. That is what Krishna is explaining in this verse. Now hear from me. I'm speaking. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Consciousness is speaking. I'm going to teach you the process. How you can practice yoga. Yoga means to link with Krishna. How you can link to Krishna in full consciousness. Your mind will be attached to me. You can know me in full, free from doubt. So Krishna is saying, your mind is attached to so many temporary, unsatisfactory things. Take that same mind and attach it to me, the Supreme Consciousness, and then your life will be perfect. Your mind is full of so many attachments. You can't exist without attachment. Now take that propensity to be attached and apply it to Krishna. This is a different type of science. And it does not involve religious belief. Just like when you touch fire. When you touch fire, does the fire ask you, are you Hindu, Muslim, Christian? No, it just burns you. Similarly, no matter what religious belief is sitting on top of your head, if you contact Krishna consciousness, you'll be transformed. So Krishna is teaching this science of connecting your mind to him in full consciousness. He doesn't say, first tell me, what are your religious beliefs? What is your tradition? What is your ism? Are you this one or that one? No. He's saying, I'm just going to teach you the process, how you can connect to me. This is very important to understand. Bhagavad Gita actually is not the property of India. It is the property of the entire spiritual and material world. Just like the sun rises in the east, but that doesn't mean the sun is the property of the east. Similarly, although Bhagavad Gita is associated with India, it's not the property of India. Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say, I'm just speaking to the Indians. This is an Indian book. No. He's claiming all living entities as his parts and parcels. He says, I'm the seed-giving father. And so he's giving information, knowledge for everyone. But somehow or other, we have concocted that this is a Hindu book. This is an Indian book. This is our concoction. Just like gold. When you have gold or you go to buy gold, is gold Hindu gold or American gold or Russian gold or Indian gold? No, gold is gold. Similarly, the process for connecting to the Supreme Consciousness is what it is. It's not bound up by any religious tradition. It is the spiritual scientific process for connecting the soul to the Supreme Soul. That's all. But with our mind, we manufacture all these religious traditions which have value because they encourage people to be nice, not to be too bad. But Bhagavad Gita is teaching a spiritual science that's far beyond ordinary religious tradition. So I'd like you all to kindly approach Bhagavad Gita in that way. That you are dealing with the highest text of consciousness. the highest demonstration of techniques for connecting to the Supreme Consciousness. If you approach the Bhagavad Gita in that way, you'll definitely profit. But first you have to remove yourself from the prejudices that are clouding your vision. Oh, Bhagavad Gita, yeah, traditional religious book, my grandmother read it, and get all that out of your mind. And here in Australia is a perfect place for you to do that, because you're a little bit uprooted from your traditional background, your traditional home field. Now you're in a new environment. So in this new environment, I'd like you to focus upon Bhagavad Gita in a fresh way. A few of you I know are doing that with enormous success. It's amazing that you had to come out of India only to find something that you should have had in India. But because you were seeing the greatest jewel with prejudiced vision, biased vision, you couldn't take advantage. But now in your transplanted environment, you can approach this greatest jewel with fresh vision, unprejudiced vision, and take advantage. That's much better than dabbling in so-called Aussie culture. Take to Krishna culture, the pure Krishna culture, as separate from so much hodgepodge religious tradition. We are dealing with the spiritual science as given by the supreme spiritual scientist himself. We're not dealing with religious belief. We're not dealing with inherited religious traditions. Oh, my grandmother, she did puja like this. My mother did puja like that. So now what kind of puja should I do? No, we're not talking about any of that. We're talking about the supreme consciousness, the individual tiny consciousness, and how the two connect. That's what Krishna's explaining to you in Bhagavad Gita. And naturally, you'll be motivated to understand who is Krishna. Who is this supreme consciousness? Who's teaching about himself? You can know me in full. What's so special about Krishna? When you start asking that question, then your life really starts to progress. So all this true progress happens when you shut down the factory for manufacturing plans for happiness. It's not necessary. And you open your ears to hear the standard way of happiness, which is right before you, so easy to accept and so profitable in terms of your development, your true development in life. All right. Any questions?
Maharaj, whenever we try to do more and engross ourselves more into this practice, why is the same as described in Bhagavad Gita itself? The other part of the God's energy, that is illusory energy, took us to, means you can say, other Aussie culture kind of thing. Why? Why it happened? Means, we are as one place, it is said we are from somewhere part and parcel of the same Lord. He was the originator, he is the originator. But why we are detached from him? Means, what is our purpose, basic purpose to come here for? Means on the earth, like if we were the part and parcel, why we were detached from him? And if it was his only wish to detach us, then why should we go back to him?
You have the power to choose because you are a conscious entity. Krishna consciousness, or bhakti yoga, is about learning how to choose the best thing. You see, there can be no love without choice. So Krishna is giving you a chance to choose him. Therefore, in this world, you have the lower things available and you have the highest things available. You're supposed to become educated and trained to make the best choice. Just like you're studying so many things at the university, or you've completed your studies. Why did you go to university? Because you wanted higher knowledge. And with that higher knowledge, you could make better choices. Corporations hire you for your ability to make the best choices for the corporation, whether IT, accounting, engineering. You've educated yourself for the purpose of demonstrating to the job market, I can help your firm, your company, your corporation. I can make the superior choices. Please hire me. So similarly, Krishna is giving you the knowledge here, knowledge of the Absolute, how to make the best choice. You can't overlook your ability to choose. It's there for a reason. So take up the education for how to make the best choice. Then the dynamics of spiritual development will become known to you. The dynamics of spiritual development rest upon choice. How to make the best choice. How to accept the higher pleasure and avoid the lower pleasure. Very practical. So the lower things are here in this world, the lower so-called pleasures, to give you an opportunity to choose the best. And by your choosing the best, you're verifying your status as someone who is in genuine connection to Krishna. Just because the lower things are here doesn't mean you're supposed to indulge in them. No, the lower things are letting you know you should be going to something higher.
All living things have this choice.
Human beings have the developed consciousness to make the choice.
So why are other living organisms different from this?
They don't have the developed consciousness that you do. Therefore, if as a human being you waste this opportunity of developed consciousness by which you can choose, this is the greatest tragedy.
Why should we assume that they don't have this consciousness? Are we being arrogant that we are human, so we have this consciousness?
Do you see any cats and dogs and kangaroos here listening?
Well, they have their own language, maybe they are communicating with God.
So why not hear from Krishna, the Supreme Consciousness, what are the various capacities of these different creatures? Otherwise you can speculate on and on. Now it's true that these creatures have consciousness, but it's not as developed as yours. That's quite obvious.
Are we assuming that? Maybe it's just like this, a case of science, where since we don't know right now, we assume that they don't have, but maybe sometime later we realize that they do have a consciousness and they do have a much better consciousness than us.
Therefore, if you take your information from the Supreme Consciousness, you won't have to speculate like this.
But this particular information was given to a human being, so this is for humans. From Supreme Consciousness, for just humans. There might be others for plants, animals, and others.
Krishna is explaining to Arjuna the best of all knowledge, the all-inclusive knowledge.
This is for humans.
No. Bhagavad Gita is for all living entities, but only human beings have the developed consciousness to understand it. And not even all human beings these days. That is the problem. Do you know, in the classic Vedic texts, it is stated, Stri Sudha Dvija Bandhunam, that Bhagavad Gita, which is part of Mahabharata, is meant especially for those who are not so educated or don't have a lifestyle of immersion in spiritual development. It's considered to be a simple text. But in this present age of spiritual degradation, person's intelligence is so distorted that they have difficulty understanding Bhagavad Gita. So let us keep things in context. If you want to understand the aptitudes and development of consciousness in other species of life, the easiest way is to hear about it directly from Krishna.
This is something given to humans.
Okay, are you a human?
Yes.
Take it then. Just take it and you'll understand the rest. Enter the laboratory. Do your research. Have your consciousness purified. Okay? You're a human being. You take it and then you'll understand the other species of life also. Okay? Thank you. So we're so much worried about what the animals are conscious of, but what about our own consciousness? Anything else? Yes?
I wanted to ask you, Swamiji, how did you feel when you read the Bhagavad Gita for the first time?
I felt that the $5 that I spent on Bhagavad Gita as it is were giving me an education far more superior than the $125,000 or so that a Yale education costs.
And did you feel that there was something within you, something inside you, saying that yes, this is true? Like you wouldn't need to verify it objectively, but there was a gut feel inside you, and either a voice within you saying that yes, this is so true.
I wasn't so pious. I wasn't so devotional. I just read it and I could see this is the best knowledge. This is definitive knowledge, exhaustive spiritual knowledge. Never mind what the inner voice might have been saying or not saying. Just objectively speaking, this is the best knowledge. It's covering all angles, answering all questions. In a non-dogmatic or fundamentalistic way. And then I saw clear instructions for applying Bhagavad Gita in life so that one can get the results. So that's what attracted me. I wasn't interested in religious belief. I wanted the best knowledge.
Have to find a teacher to understand Bhagavad Gita.
What does Krishna say about that in Bhagavad Gita? He says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasthena sevaya. If you want to know the truth, Lord Krishna says, about all these things I'm explaining, then you must approach an expert devotee. In that way, you'll understand the knowledge. You have to accept Krishna's system. Is it possible to be a lawyer or accountant in Australia without, being certified? No. People want to know, where have you studied? What is your accreditation? Mm-hmm. By following Krishna's instructions, how to understand Bhagavad Gita, you'll be successful. He's giving you laboratory instructions. So this is the great wealth that's available to you, the greatest wealth. Now, while you're doing your studies, while you're doing your work, if you add to your life this greatest wealth, all your endeavors will be successful. Your family life will be successful. The whole your human form of life itself will be successful. So this is Krishna's invitation in Bhagavad Gita. Take to the higher knowledge and then you'll have the higher happiness. All right. Yes?
Maharaji, when you say this is a better success or greater success than the normal materialistic success, then one question which comes to mind is the normal materialistic success has given us some pain along with the temporary happiness. One question is this is a riskier path because most of people have been following the normal materialistic way and we know where they are landing. But in this way, when we go for this success,
when
should one see this is not going to give any other sort of pain? And
that's why you have to educate yourself. Krishna is seeking to educate you. Everything is explained in Bhagavad Gita. You'll experience this. This will happen to you. That will happen to you. Isn't that fair? And what makes you think you know so well what's going to happen to you in material life?
Material life, we know like there are some successes and then there are some...
successes, failures, pains, pleasures. So what can you expect by following Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita?
I mean, if the same sort of uncertainty is there, then the early one is, you know, one is good enough to stay in the materialistic way.
You hear from Krishna about the spiritual wealth available for you. Then you'll know what to expect. The first thing is that you'll be free from thinking you're the body. Identifying with your temporary body and mind is the source of misery. So the first thing that Krishna wants you to experience is you don't any longer think, I am this body, I am the mind. You start to experience your spiritual identity. The next step is you start to experience your connection to the supreme spiritual identity. And then the third step is you start to exchange pure love between the limited soul and the unlimited soul. It's all described in Bhagavad Gita. There's no need to fear or be in anxiety. Now, we're getting a little late now. I'm really happy that you all are very inquisitive. So we're going to, this weekend, we'll go deeper into these subject matters. This has just been our introductory session. Okay? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thank you.